Hi, I'm Maya, and I'm the host and producer of Teen's Choice Book Show, and welcome on KZI 88.7 FM. Today for Black History Month, I will be interviewing Dinah Ramey Berry and Callie Nicole Gross, co-authors of A Black Woman's History of the United States. The book celebrates different Black women's stories and changes they've made in the U.S. Dinah Ramey Berry is the chair of the History Department at the University of Texas at Austin. Professor Berry completed her bachelor's and master's and PhD in African American Studies and U.S. History at the University of California, Los Angeles. She is a scholar of the enslaved as a specialist on gender and slavery, as well as the Black woman's history in the United States. Berry is the award-winning author and editor of 6 books and several scholarly articles. Callie Nicole Gross is a professor of African American Studies at Emory University and the Martin Luther King at Emory University and the Martin Luther King Jr. Professor of History at Rutgers University, New Brunswick. She is also the National Publications Director of the Association of Black Women Historians from 2019 to 2021, and a distinguished lecturer for the Organization of American Historians. Her primary historical research explores Black women's experiences in the U.S. criminal justice system. Dr. Berry and Dr. Gross, welcome to Teen's Choice Book Show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So I want to start off with some questions about the writing in the book in general. So when looking back on what I've been taught in U.S. history in the 8th grade, the only Black woman that I can recall learning about was Harriet Tubman. And in U.S. history, we learned about history from right when the U.S. was colonized and formed, like even a little bit before that, in 1600s to the Civil War. And I really don't recall learning about anyone else except Harriet Tubman. And I feel like it is really important to learn about Black women and their stories in history, because it's really essential to learn about the full story and like what goes on in history. So what do you think about this?
I think that was both of our, at least I'm pretty sure that was both of our experience growing up. At least for myself, the what I learned about Black history was about one paragraph. Black people came from Africa. They were enslaved. There was Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass. And then they jumped to freedom and Martin Luther King. Sometimes Rosa Parks, but that was pretty much the extent of my like childhood education in the K through 12 education. So I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you picked up on one of the main issues that we both were interested in contending with is like, just to echo Dr. Berry, I learned about Harriet Tubman and Rosa Parks. That was about it. Oh, and also actually, weirdly, Roberta Flack, because I did a book report in school and I wanted to do something on a Black woman, and the only other sort of biography that existed on a Black woman in my school's library at that time was about the performer, Roberta Flack. And so those were like the 3 Black women that I learned about in history.
So what inspired you to write a book about the history of Black women?
Well, both of us have been scholars of Black women's history for our entire careers. We were both trained by African-American female PhDs, and we were approached by our publisher at Beacon Press to co-author this book. And we thought now would be a great time to do that. Callie, you might want to say more about
that. Yeah, absolutely. All of that. And then also, in the course of teaching, one of the things that we try to do in teaching is to address the absence that you so rightly pointed out. And so we spend a lot of time bringing Black women's history into all of our history courses. So when I teach African-American history, I also make sure that I, have African-American women's history represented within that. When I look at history of race, criminal justice. So all those spaces, we try to bring that in. And so when we were approached, it was at this great moment, because the only other sort of book that existed at that point was almost 20, 25 years old. And so we were both thinking about, as we taught courses on Black women's history, that the time had really come for us to have another sort of book that served the needs of readers in the 21st century.
So also in the book, A Black Woman's History of the United States, you do tell like a lot of different stories and different about different women, like different time periods. And so I was wondering, what was the research process like for creating the book?
Gosh, it was pretty dynamic because it went on for a while. This book actually took a little bit longer than we anticipated because we had other books that we were both doing on our own, single authored works that we were working on at the time. And so this book sort of took a back shelf position for a little while. But a lot of the research was archival research. Some of it was research that was done online. Some of it was research through popular media sources, through film and television. We wanted to try to make sure that what we were presenting was accessible. And that if you wanted to do some more research, you could go look up a story or look at a website and find some of the material that we included in the book, in addition to stuff that we might have found at a university archive or a state archive.
Absolutely. And we also really drew on, the good news is that there's been a lot of work done in Black women's history. So many other folks are writing on the subject right now. So there was a wealth of sort of single authored monographs also that we could draw on as well. So it was good to be able to amplify the voices of some of those writers also. And then we also worked kind of in tandem in terms of writing with each other, thinking about what stories we wanted to amplify and how to go about doing that with respect to the research. Mm-hmm. And then also just trying to get input from as many folks as possible to make sure that we came up with a book that people would want to read, but also that they could actually get through and finish, right? It couldn't be dry, you know? it needed to be dynamic.
And also kind of going back to like the question I asked you before and like about what I learned in US history and also kind of like relating to what you just said now, when I think about like what happened or when I think about looking through the different stories in the book, I did notice that there weren't many women that were or women in the book that maybe the public would recognize or that anyone who maybe hasn't specifically studied Black women in history would be able to like recognize this person just from the name. And so how did you decide who you wanted to feature in the book?
Go ahead, Callie.
It's a great question.
It's a great question.
Complicated. You hit on a tension in the work. So we had a workshop where we had a brilliant group of mm-hmm. scholars who do work on African American women's history mm-hmm. read through our drafts of the book. Yeah. And Diana and I, you know, we talked about this. We did want to like pick out those women that folks hadn't really heard a lot about. Mm-hmm. And we got some pushback from folks because they felt like we needed to include Black women that people did know about just mm-hmm. sort of as anchors. So it was a real balance between trying to amplify the stories of women that people didn't know, but also put them in a context or on a continuum with some women that they would recognize. Mm-hmm. Just so that people, I guess, could have a broader sense of how that historical arc worked. Mm-hmm. But we also tried to get a variety of Black women, right? So we wanted to select figures that would represent all different kinds of experiences so that ideally as many Black women and girls as possible mm-hmm. could pick up this book and learn something or see some history that was also about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that's really important. And I feel like you did a pretty good job of like being able to explain it in a way where someone who maybe again like doesn't really study like Black women in history, like could make the connection with something or someone that they learned in elementary school and mm-hmm. be like, oh, I learned about this person and they're kind of like who I read about in this book. So I understand what's going on here.
Oh, that's awesome. That is great. Cause that's exactly what, like Dr. Gross was saying, that was what we were struggling with. And that's what our colleague said, you have to give them somebody to connect to anchor to. And I love hearing, like, I think it's so cool hearing you say that you saw that and recognized it. Cause that was absolutely the point of what we were trying to do with that type of writing style. Mm.
So how long did it take you to write the book?
Do we know the answer to that? I'm just trying to think, I don't know that I've actually wanted to count the years, to be honest. Oh my gosh. And the other thing I'll say, just to be serious for a moment, is that during the writing process, one of the things, in addition to us working on other books, but changing universities, going up for promotion at our current institutions, we also had personal losses. You know, Dr. Gross lost her mother. I lost my father. Dr. Gross lost her first cousin. And so that also changed the way we approached the writing, because we were in a very raw and real emotional state. And that also added to it. But I can't, do you remember what year we signed the contract?
If memory serves, yeah. I think we signed the contract for the book in 2013.
Golly, wow. I hadn't looked at that in a while.
In that time, we also completed our single authored book. So my book came out in 2016, and Dinah, I think your book
mm-hmm.
in 2017. Mm-hmm. So, but in between, even in doing that work, we were working and organizing and thinking about how to structure and do the research for Gather Sources for this mm-hmm. book.
So 7 years.
You know, it was intense.
It was very intense.
It was intense.
That sounds like a really intense process. And then also like being able to balance writing your own book and life, and then also working on another book with a partner. So in, I believe, near the end of the book, one of the women featured was Shirley Chisholm. And so I wanted to ask some questions about her. So again, like when reading the book about her specifically, I noticed that like she announced that she wanted to be the Democratic presidential nominee in 1972. And this was kind of unheard of during that time, because not only was she Black, but she was also a woman. And so it seems like maybe she did this as a social experiment to see how people would react to it and to maybe further prove a point like, oh, if you're a woman or if you're Black, you're probably not going to be able like to become president in that time. But also maybe she thought that there was like a small chance of her actually winning the election. So I was wondering, how do you think the public felt about this when she announced it?
You know, so Shirley Chisholm is really fascinating for me. I think that she ran in part knowing that it was highly unlikely, but at the same time, it was also about initiating change, to push the envelope, to be audacious and to really trouble these ideas. It's also a way too of getting the experiences of especially marginalized communities into a mainstream discussion, right? That she was speaking to a demographic of folks whose voices were not heard. And so even as folks maybe knew that Shirley Chisholm was unlikely to be the first Black woman president of the US, right, in 1972, that she did help to make people think seriously about the plight of poor people, of women, of folks of color, of, you know, of urban inner city communities that typically, whenever people think about like real America, a lot of times these are not the communities that they tend to be thinking of, even though they constitute a really powerful and significant voting bloc.
Mm. So also kind of, again, relating to her, I feel like the world has changed significantly from 1972 to now, like we've seen our first Black president and the first Black and Indian vice president. So how do you think, Shirley, a Black woman who also ran for president, would feel about today's society and the progress that is made, and also maybe some things that have not made much progress since then?
I think she'd be happy to see that. I think she'd feel like her time in the 70s, her run, was worth something. It was meant something. And it also paved the way and opened doors for someone like Kamala Harris, someone like Barack Obama, to come forward behind her, after her. So I think she would be excited. I also think one of the messages that we were trying to make, and I think you picked up on this, is that she was like, I'm a candidate for the people of America. I'm not Black America's candidate. I'm not Women's American candidate, but I'm the candidate for the American people. And I think that's something that we've seen in other Black political figures. And I think that message was really clear when she said it then. And I think it still remains clear now. So I think she'd be happy.
So also specifically about Kamala and Shirley and kind of like the resemblance that they both have. So both of them did run for the Democratic nomination of president. And so I was wondering, How do you think Shirley would have felt about Kamala running for this position during this time?
I think she would have been ecstatic and you know, supported her candidacy. I think that she ran. One of the things I love about Black women and Black women's history is that there's this phenomenal way in which many of these Black women seem to understand their role both as change agents and also as playing a role along this greater historical continuum. Like, I'm just blown away by their contributions in this way, that somehow they seem to know that what they do is gonna have this greater impact going forward. Like, we saw that like with Alice Coachman, right, who won the first Olympic gold medal. She talked about the fact that she knew if she didn't win or do well, there wouldn't be others coming behind her. And so I think that Shirley Chisholm also understood herself and her role in history too. So maybe she anticipated this moment. You know, if anything, she might be disappointed that we haven't yet had our Black woman president. But but beyond that, I think that, you know, Black women like Shirley Chisholm bravely undertook their activism with this kind of future in mind.
So if you're just joining us, I'm Maya, and today I'm interviewing Dinah Ramey Berry and Callie Nicole Gross, who are co-authors of A Black Woman's History of the United States. And don't forget, you're listening to Teen's Choice Book Show on Below Zero on KZI 88.7 FM, and you can find us on Instagram at Teen's Choice Book Show. So going back to the book, also, like, one of the very first stories mentioned was about Nanny. And so reading about her, it seemed like she made, like, contributed a lot to how the world is today and how history is presented and, like, Black women in general. So I was wondering specifically, how do you feel about the influence that she made in today's society?
So are you speaking about Nanny Helen Burroughs?
Yes.
Or Nanny the Maroon. I was wondering the same thing.
I know.
There's a couple of nannies in here.
I wasn't sure which nanny.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, she's also another one of my favorites who we should know so much more about. You know, she organized. She was among one of the founders of this early Black, you know, Black Women's Civil Rights Organization. She, you know, spearheaded a school that contributed to, you know, educating all, you know, Black children in the DC area. She supported suffrage. She contributed, I think, in ways great and small to the history. And I also love her too, because she also called out certain kinds of hypocrisies and social injustice. She was very critical of colorism within the Black community, or something that, you know, she spoke very strongly about. She also was very, interestingly enough, even though she had sort of all of the strictures for what would make her be considered like elite, she also was very sympathetic and understanding to the plight of poor and everyday Black people. And I think that kind of tradition has endured.
And I feel like that really is important to have someone who first started, like, looking at how society was in that time and noticing, like, these are the things that need to be changed, instead of just sitting there and letting what's happening happen and not really being willing to make a change and point out what does need to be changed and the hypocrisy and, like, what she said, like, with colorism in the Black community as well, and, like, being able to identify not only these problems outside of your community, but, like, in your own community yourself, and, like, being able to have that bravery to do something like that.
We see, like, a lot of other women in the book do that. You know, I think she sets a tone for a level of activism that most Black women that we wrote about in there were involved in. You know, we've talked about this before, multiple movements that they were active in, not just suffrage, but also anti-slavery. You know, there's all kinds of campaigns that they were fighting within their communities, trying to find ways to help with people gaining an education, to, you know, burial rights, you know, all kinds of things that you see that these, some of the women that we wrote about were doing. They weren't just sort of focusing on one cause at a time. And I think that, to me, is just, it gives me a challenge. You know, it makes me think, like, okay, what can I do? What more can I do? And what other areas does my, whatever gifts and talents I have, what other areas can I influence? And staying in my lane at the same time.
So what was you guys' favorite person to be able to learn about and write about?
That one's easy. We have had this question before. We struggle with it. We usually have two people, but I'm going to try to keep mine to one today. Mine's Isabel de Oliveira, who was the woman that we opened up in the first chapter with. This is a woman who was of Mexican, excuse me, she was in Mexico, but she was of African and Indian descent. And we used her quote to start off the book because she demands justice. And we felt like that really set the stage for Black women demanding justice through every period of American history. She goes on an expedition. She explores the New World. And she's going as a single Black woman who is neither bound by marriage or slavery, which I thought was just powerful. And learning about her was one of my most enjoyous parts of this. And Dr. Gross and I had several conversations when we were talking about how to work her in. And it was, she's the person I would say out of the book.
So I'm going to behave too and go with one. And so for me, I think it was Frances Thompson, turn of the century, Black woman who survived the Memphis riots, goes on to testify about her victimization and comes basically under like this intense scrutiny from the white establishment as a result of it. She's persecuted. A number of white doctors, subject her to these examinations because they allege that she is a man in woman's clothing. And after a series of invasive investigations, it turns out that they say that, she is in fact a man and she's incarcerated, even though she herself may consider herself to be of double sex. And so it is powerful for me that a Black woman, in the 1870s, right, after the Civil War, after enslavement, after these riots, like found a way to live her truth, right, contending with things that even today, people are still having to fight against. And while she suffered greatly, I mean, she is incarcerated and she died shortly after her release, she maintained her fight throughout that incarceration and stood up for herself, for her right to live and identify as she chose.
So now I have some questions specifically about you guys and the changes that you've made and just about like your opinions on today's society. So for both of you, I was wondering, when did you first realize that history was your passion and that you wanted to study and pursue it?
Mine was my senior year in undergrad because I wasn't a history major. I was an econ major. And I took a class that was a Black history class, and I did not like the way it was taught. I didn't like the way Black people were portrayed. I didn't like the way the professor talked about Black people. And wrote him a letter instead of taking the midterm. It's a long story, but that experience combined with a Black female historian coming to the same university that following fall, me taking a class with her, I ended up staying on and deciding to become a history major and that I wanted to be a historian. If I didn't like the way the books were written, then I needed to go write books myself. And that's like the short version of the story.
So I had a much later epiphany about it. I was in graduate school, actually in another field. It's just a true story. And I participated, but I was always very much like an avowed Black feminist. And I believed that we should remain committed to the Black community and find a way to give back. And so one of the ways that we did that was to team teach a course on Black women in history to inmates. I'm sorry, why this thing? I keep turning this off. Sorry, all right, you will edit it. So we team taught this course to female inmates at the State Correctional Institution in Muncie, Pennsylvania. And when I taught the class, I was shocked at like the amount of, I knew Black women would be there, but I always thought about like mass incarceration as something that only affected Black men. So I was shocked to see how many Black women were there, how overrepresented they were, and also how old the institution itself looked. And I thought, how long have Black women been here? Like, what is this place? And that's actually what started me doing more historical research into Black women in the criminal justice system. And once that happened, I just never looked back. I changed departments and the rest is Black history.
I love that. I don't think I knew that story. That's awesome.
You did not, yeah.
I knew about the teaching, but I never knew. I knew about you teaching at Muncie, but I didn't know that made you become a historian. I had no idea.
I started out looking at Black women's entrepreneurship and thinking about the exchanges between Black women in Harlem and sisters from the continent who were doing Senegalese, like the hair braiders.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And I was looking at like Black women's entrepreneurship, something like totally different. And then after teaching that course, yeah.
Changed. That's awesome.
Changed.
So do you think that children like in high school, middle school and elementary school, and maybe even adults in college also, do you think that like the history needs to be updated? Kind of like what we were talking about before in the very beginning and how like I couldn't even recall a Black woman that was taught in U.S. history besides Harriet Tubman. And also you guys were kind of talking about wanting to fix this problem. So like what specifically do you think or do you feel like needs to be updated?
Well, I would say the textbooks and the standards, the historical standards. I mean, the state standards that they're requiring, the knowledge that they want students to learn has to incorporate the experiences of marginalized groups of people, men, women. You know, they don't have LGBTQ+. You don't see that in textbooks. And I think it's starting to change. But until the textbooks and the standards change, then we're not gonna see the changes that we need, that we're asking for. And until the textbooks include stories of people that we have in this book, you're not gonna, until that's a requirement for them to know about these groups of people, it's not gonna happen. So that also then goes out to like the school boards, it goes out to the superintendents and the people that work for the educational agencies that make decisions on what goes in textbooks. So there's like four or five layers of change that need to happen. And I think it needs to be, people need to be doing that at all times and it needs to be happening simultaneous. Mm.
I would agree with everything that Diana said.
So what do you think that people my age or teenagers could do to make a difference?
I think you're already engaging in it by having a show, by raising these issues, by reading and taking pains to educate yourself. All of that is vital and important. And I think that it is one thing we know from our history is that young people have also played powerful roles in changing the structure in this country. If we think about civil rights, I mean, some of the most powerful actors were young people who marched and who also sadly were martyred. So I think that there's a history of Black youth taking these active roles. And I think that you all have the ability to think critically and to educate yourselves, and you make your voices heard. You know how to do technology way better than the rest of us. So I would encourage more of that to engage, to make your voices heard. And it's my hope that you all can come maybe become leaders for us, because it's clear that I think generations before us, we haven't learned how to speak to each other in ways that are effective and productive. Maybe your generation will be the ones to solve that.
I agree with all that. I have nothing to add. I think that's beautifully put.
Well, I'm your host, Maya, and thank you, Dinah Ramey Berry and Callie Nicole Gross, co-authors of Black Women's History of the United States, for coming on. And thanks for listening to Teen's Choice Book Show on Below Zero on KZI 88.7 FM, and have a happy Black History Month.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.